Today on the Cooligans, we're talking Champions League, a little Champions League recap, a lot of crazy games, goalkeeper scoring goals. That was insane. Also, Anthony Gordon has some thoughts on Champions League versus Premier League and what's better, what's worse. We talk all about it with my guest co-host today of CBS Sports, Christine Kupo.
And that's not all. We're going to hit the U.S. Women's National Team's recent two matches in this January window and what that indicates for the U.S. Women's National Team going forward.
Today and more, all this today and more on the Cooligans. I just saw the movie Sinners. Did you see the movie Sinners? Have you seen it yet?
Wait, you just saw Sinners for the first time?
For the first time.
Christian, I've seen this movie like 400 times. Like, I'm probably on some watch list that Ryan Coogler has. Like, this is concerning.
What a terrible mistake on my part in not watching it sooner. What a fantastic movie.
It's outstanding.
It is outstanding. It is beautiful. It is so well done. Every single aspect of it.
The musical scene. You know what I'm talking about,
right?
They go through the eras and genres.
Oh, my God.
Like, influence through the time periods.
Emotional.
And how
in
evolved.
Tears.
Yeah, it's very, very good.
Yeah, so when... So all the context around, like, the movie not winning, like, a Golden Globe.
Snubbed. Or getting snubbed. I feel like that's the only film that I've seen where, like, of course, there's snub lists that have come out.
Sure.
But that's truly the only snub, in my opinion.
And so when I was seeing all of that and hearing all those stories about it getting snubbed, I'm like, oh, I guess the movie wasn't that great.
No,
so I couldn't participate in the anger. And then I saw the movie. And then, like, retroactively, I'm like, how dare they not give the movie a golden? It was absolutely fantastic. I mean, Ryan Coogler, I mean, does his thing. But this is just a... Yeah, a notice to everyone who was you know, flawed
resistant
like me.
And that hadn't seen it. Do you understand that I don't like to go to the movie theater because people don't know how to actually participate in sitting in movie theaters anymore.
I mean, since COVID, it's just been we don't even know. do those still exist?
People come, like, they just take their shoes off. They're like chatting.
I mean, I reserved my ticket to go see Melania, obviously. The new movie Melania, which I'm excited to see. I know everybody else is on board.
Let me know how that goes. I want to know what the mix of the patrons
opening,
are.
The opening in a theater in Boston sold zero tickets. Like, they're really...
How weird. I can't imagine. But I legitimately went to see Sinners in a movie theater the first week it came out. And I haven't been to a movie theater for probably years prior. Yeah. And I subsequently haven't been. So that speaks volumes.
This movie gets you out of the house. So yeah.
I cried. I was outraged. It was such
holy
a good movie.
Smoke. What,
but it was also just, like, beautifully shot.
Beautiful. What a fantastic film. This is going to be, now forget soccer. This is going to be a nice.
Welcome to our film segment.
film review show. Bro, yeah, this is just letting everybody go see Sinners if you have not yet. Absolutely. Just like a transformational film as far as, like, just how you either, whether you're watching it at home, whether you're watching it in the theater, you leave a different person.
Yeah. If you appreciate art, you'll appreciate it. If you don't and you're an uncultured swine, you'll love the vampire storyline. It's got everything for everyone.
Uncultured swine. Don't talk to our audience that way.
Oh, come on. You only bring me on to talk dirty to them.
Exactly. All right, pigs. welcome. Welcome to the Cooligans, everybody. My name is Christian Polanco, and I'm here with my guest host today, who hasn't been here in a minute, Christine Kupo.
You guys got all professional on me, and you said, no, we need to step our standards up here.
We said, you know what? Christine Kupo's a loose cannon. We need a reliable, you know, we stick with our stable and reliable regular host, Alexis Guerreros, who never tosses any curveballs at us.
Very predictable gentleman. Very measured. Yeah.
You already know what's coming next. But no, excited to have you here. We have a hot show today. We're going to be talking, obviously, Champions League. U.S. Women's National Team played a couple matches. I also saw, for some reason, they're playing Japan three times in a week.
I mean, if you want to get tested.
So that's so fascinating. I mean, there's going to be blood at the end. They're going to be fighting at the by that third game. Anyway, let's start today with Champions League because match day 8 just happened. Stop looking at the official table. It is lying to you. Just because Tottenham finished tied doesn't mean they're actually winning this thing.
We watched the chaos so you didn't have to. Today, we're ranking the actual threats from the absolute frauds.
To the only teams that matter.
This is the top topic.
All right, let's take a look at this list because match day 8 was actually pretty insane. There was this is our second year with this new Champions League. So we have to sort of find a different way to be excited. Honestly, this feels a little bit like MLS and NWSL decision day. They're biting our style a little bit.
Feeling American?
So all the matches are happening at the same time. Now we're looking at not only just points and wins and losses and draws. We're looking at goal differentials. The only thing this time around, and I don't exactly remember the table last year, but it just felt like there were so many mediocre teams, so many teams on 6 points, on 3 points, whatever, they were already out. But like, just I wasn't super excited about, you know, the teams from like 20 and down or whatever, but they made it pretty interesting, especially with Benfica and Benfica Real Madrid. I just want to start just talking about that game because that was one of the most surreal moments to end any match. I mean, whether it was a final, whether it was anything, or just a regular season game, that was pretty insane. Obviously, the goal from Anatoly Trubin, the goalkeeper, and they win. They're winning the game 3-2 against Real Madrid, and Real Madrid has 2 red cards, and they realize late that they need to get another goal to climb up over the table over Marseille. And the goalkeeper scores a goddamn goal.
Let's back it up so that we can help the people with some nerd info, right? Sure. So Jose Mourinho's record against Real Madrid is 0 wins in any prior matchup.
That's fascinating. Okay.
So as we move into this match, it makes it even less likely that a Benfica led by Jose Mourinho would manage to get this result. Add to that now the romantic side of football, where you pull your keeper and get them active in the dying minutes of stoppage time. And he comes up so big and gets the game-winning header. Like, my hair is standing up on my arm right now because that's why we fall in love with football.
Yeah, yeah. This was even after the game, I hate when people have to, like, players have to be professional, especially a goalkeeper that scores a goal. He was just like, you know, I'm glad that we did it for the team and all this stuff. Like, you're not excited enough for me, bro.
You would be, Christian, I'm telling you right now, you would be so sick of me. I would literally have a t-shirt printed, a graphic running on it, digital, of me scoring that goal, and I'd wear it every single day for a year.
I would wear it during the post-match interview. I would get it made during stoppage time and get it made. Because I'd be like, did you see me out there? That was crazy, right? That was it. Look, the
saved his team, right? Pushed them right into that playoff qualification spot.
Yeah.
But also in this, embarrassment comes because Brugge, thinking that they're being nice, throw up on their digital board in the stadium.
Yeah.
Essentially, congrats, Marseille. Oh, and nope.
clock ain't finished, bro. The game ain't over. You're celebrating. You're congratulating them a little too early. Yeah, it was a fantastic moment, and there were a bunch of great goals in this last match day. There's also embarrassment also on Real Madrid side, right? Because I don't know if he got a yellow card, but Mbappe like blocking Trubin to like. With the, you know, the goal kick and all. So there was just a lot of confusion. Rodrigo getting sent off. Just a lot of where it just
Hot
highlights.
Heads.
It just highlights like kind of like what's going on with Real Madrid ever since Xabi Alonso left and all the drama losing to Barcelona and the Supercopa and all that. Like that's they've had a couple wins here and there, but it just seems like the problems haven't gone away just because Xabi Alonso is gone. But I want to start right now with the a little bit of a ranking list and just sort of see where we are with some of these teams.
Okay.
So let's start with our pretenders of the Champions League. And these are all the teams that are remaining. So let's bring up my list because I First off, as far as a pretender, and I've just been disappointed with them this season, Borussia Dortmund. I just, like, whether it's in Bundesliga, whether it's in Champions League, I don't expect much from them. And then also, we already saw on the screen, Real Madrid as well. I'm gonna just put it out there. Pretender might feel harsh, but like I just said, the drama around this team has not gone away. It feels like they're running the insane asylum. The patients are running the insane yes. or something. Like, clearly the players have so much authority. And it sort of highlights kind of like how the philosophy, at least compared to like a Barcelona, which clearly has a style and they bring in players that fit in that style. Real Madrid is like, let's get the best superstars.
Which we've seen hasn't worked. If you look at PSG as a case study.
Right. But sometimes it kind of works. But this time around, I mean, it feels just like we have enough data and enough evidence. Mbappe leaves PSG and they win the Champions League, and Real Madrid is in kind of a bit of a struggle. So those are my pretenders, because I don't think we can expect too much. Even though, yes, they've won 15 Champions League in Real Madrid, and Borussia Dortmund's won one, I believe. We should double check. But the fact that Real Madrid is just looking the way they do, and then these red cards, I just think there's bigger issues internally at the club, which is why they're gonna have their return. And we have confirmed Borussia Dortmund did win one Champions League. Okay. who are your pretenders?
So
Christine?
My pretenders, despite the fact that I'm incredibly high on Benfica right now. Okay. Like, I am like huffing all of those wonderful like, this is so
the
great.
The Mourinho fumes.
No, I do. Okay. And like, I love Jose Mourinho. We can talk about what that means for me psychologically going forward. But I
don't even think his wife says that.
Right, Jose, let's share a pizza.
I like you. You cool, Jose.
But I just think that they have too many inconsistencies at this level. And that's like, they've squeaked through. Sometimes that bit of resistance can prove to be enough to push a team forward.
Yeah.
But for right now, they're going to be one of my pretenders. And then the other one is Tottenham, and not because I just adore hitting Tottenham with just direct shots. But I really think that they are right now domestically wonky in terms of how they're performing in Champions League. Yeah. And quite frankly, I don't know that they're going to be able to just sort of move forward. Like, I think the other part is I've factored in whom they've actually played thus far.
Yeah.
And they've had a pretty like underhanded softball lob of a schedule. I don't see that happening going forward, where as we're going into knockouts and other the round of 16, that this is going to be smooth sailing for them. They're going to actually be truly challenged.
They've had they're in fourth place in the Champions League table, which is kind of crazy.
It's what I'll say is I think it's misleading.
Sure. And this is going to happen with this new Champions League format, where you're going to get...
Right. And you know what? Quite frankly, I think the format works for that reason, right? We've gotten a lot more entertaining matches out of this, scrappy debutantes and things like that.
But it does highlight, I think, where, you know, to a lot of people, they watch Tottenham in the Premier League and it's like, this is a team. This is everybody fire.
What do you think of
Thomas
Tottenham?
Frank? Like the whole thing. But then it's like, I think even a crap Tottenham in the Premier League is like a really good team in Europe. That's kind of where the gap is sort of showing. But their group, Eintracht Frankfurt, they beat them 2-0. They beat Dortmund 2-0. Slavia Prague. Good. Yeah. What a good group. Who did they even lose to? They lost to PSG. This is like, I think it's
again, if that's your only real challenge,
it's interesting. Well, cause I see people saying like, you know, they should get rid of Thomas Frank, and it's like, well, how? I mean, it's just like, this Champions League form is like, it's you have to give him some credit where credit is due. It's just like the Premier League is just a little bit tougher. All right, let's move on to dark horses. My dark horses here, I'm going to go with Juve and Sporting Clube Portugal. Sporting has had, in particular, Huge. They beat, they had a late win, I believe, against, I think, Benfica. No, no, they don't. They wouldn't play Benfica. They was it Real Madrid? I don't remember. They had two, like, late wins. They had a comeback win yesterday. They, against Athletic Bilbao. They are, like, showing a level of composure and heart and playing in Europe that I think is, that has to be taken somewhat seriously. So, Sporting, I think they could have a magic run, and who knows if they could end up winning it. And Juve also, especially with Weston McKennie's form, been loving how he is especially in this contract year when some people don't know if he's leaving or staying or whatever.
We've been on this ride before, yes, Christian. Yes, yes.
Every time you're here, we have to, with the Juventina.
I need to, like, literally get on his payroll somehow because, and you know what? The thing is, I've always approached this so objectively in terms of McKennie. As soon as he got signed to Juve, of course, I was talking about him ad nauseum because, one, covering Serie A, but also being involved in, like, Juve-specific podcasts and everyone there being Italian and Italy-based. Having the intel as one of the few Americans that knew Weston's true trajectory, his talent, his skill set, his drive, his just work rate, and being able to say, like, yes, I rate him, and then having it come to light that, like, God damn, I was right the whole time, and I love being right.
Sure.
But every single challenge that's been presented to him in his professional career in Italy, he has risen to the occasion and then some. And he's worked with this instability at Juve. I would argue that in my course of my fandom there, it's been some of the most unstable years with some of the quickest managerial changes that we've seen out of Juventus as a big club. And he's weathered them all, right? Like, he came in ushered with Pirlo. McKennie didn't even have his badges.
McKennie must be good on first dates. You know what I mean? He's just like good first impression. He just, like, can always win people over.
I'm like, I don't know if I do his, like, dating PR. I'm like, he's good as a footballer.
I'm just saying.
Goofy. He's a good dude.
It's just like remarkable that through all these managerial changes, he always I wouldn't say he comes out unscathed, but he finds.
He doesn't, but every single season we have the headline of McKennie's falling out of favor.
Right.
And every season it's like they ask him to prove himself again. But remembering that he's the first ever American signing at Juventus, ever. Okay. So not only that, but, like, going to an Italian team that just hasn't had American player exposure or an understanding of some of the cultural nuances and what he's able
to
do.
The ranch dressing.
All right, I honestly can't forgive that.
A lot against him. I'm just saying.
That might be his fatal flaw, but I digress. He legitimately has risen to the occasion. He's proven that he's serious, that he will work his ass off. Yeah. And on top of that, he has always been this Swiss Army knife of a player where you can put him anywhere. And I always wished, this was my wish for him many years back, saying, I hope when he goes to Juve, he gets to better specialize and he's not asked to carry water in every role,
right,
because it makes it very hard. Because, yes, you can inarguably be placed out of a position at a club if you're not somebody that can do something very specific. He's proven that he's kind of jumped the shark there.
Did you see the goal that he had with the 1-2 with Jonathan David the other day? I mean, he looks like a 10 all of a sudden. Well, I think Spalletti did just say, like, we want to get him up.
He's always had the capacity to play in these roles. And if you see how he's played over the years, you can take snippets of things that he's done and be like, hey, do you see what I'm talking about when I say, like, there's quality there? And it's the fact that he hasn't gotten to sit in a particular role for long enough to say, oh, let's further cultivate that.
Sure.
Like, and quite frankly, it's worked out great for him.
Sure. Also, I think they're sort of adjusting well, especially in Champions League. They're getting a little, in Serie A, there's, like, little by little, like, better results.
They've been consistent.
Yeah, they've been. So it's sort of just not, like, nice to see, because it feels like, especially Serie A, is, like,
won pretty and they've won ugly in Serie A. And I feel like things are getting quickly more positive for a Juve run by Spalletti.
Okay. So let's look at your dark horses. And obviously Juve's already on there. And Atalanta. Okay.
Yes. Atalanta, again, a team that they're identity and style resonates with me. We know they love their like high flying, high pressing football. And that's great. I think their risk reward profile is something that is both dicey for them, but also makes them a good dark horse candidate. They're willing to be bold in some instances where other teams just won't ride or die for that.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, look, they won Europa League last season. The bar is pretty high, especially we'll see what they can do. All right. Let's look at some contenders. Who do we think has a real shot to win this whole thing? For me, I'm going to go with maybe shocking. I don't know if it's shocking to some. And I'm not necessarily super high on both these choices, but Barcelona and PSG. You just mentioned sort of a risk reward. Barcelona, you know, especially in the Hansi Flick era, are incredibly high risk team, defending is clearly not their priority or strength. And again, with most teams in the Champions League, I think they would be fine. But as soon as you get to set piece FC in Arsenal or whatever, I think it's going to get a little bit
goals
dicey.
That win games.
PSG, I think they could also do well. I think the changes from last season to this one, losing out on Donnarumma, I think that's going to be the margins of like why you probably can't do it, right? And Donnarumma now, Donnarumma just should have stayed on that team and they would have been just as good. And I think him leaving made PSG worse. And also going to Man City, I also think he made them worse as well. Not his fault per se, right, but the team collectively, I just don't think they are better with Donnarumma there.
Listen, I had this discourse right before he had been signed to Man City, and I criticized this move and said, I don't know if it's going to be beneficial for either side. And people acted like I told them that like the moon landing wasn't real. I legitimately was like, no, like we should be critical of this. We don't know that this is going to work. He's the best keeper. And I love, first of all, if I'm being objectively critical of an Italian goalkeeper, like I'm keeping it a buck. Okay. Yeah.
Like it's just like the style of play that Man City just you don't immediately think Donnarumma.
Right.
And
the argument was, okay, well, is Pep going to adjust for him? Is this something that he feels is beneficial? And
yeah, I think the bigger issue I think is the injuries, especially to Ruben Dias, like the center back issues that they've been having mostly because of injury. I think that is what has made Donnarumma look worse.
Again, another argument that we've had ad nauseum is like, it's much harder to replace a world-class center back or pairing than it is to get a good striker in and replace them.
Interesting. So, okay, well put. The last thing I'll say about Barcelona is like, especially after watching Marcus Rashford's free kick, they really should do everything they can to keep him. Barcelona has, they're in dire straits financially. They don't know what they're doing. And I don't think they can afford him, or unless he takes like some serious pay cut. But Marcus Rashford needs to do everything possible to stay in Barcelona.
Marcus Rashford deserves to be happy.
Yeah, man.
Quite frankly.
He's so good.
He's such a quality player and human being that I genuinely want good for him.
Sure.
I mean, preferably not in a team that's going to ever come up against any teams that I genuinely care about. But Barca have had a really rough financial trajectory. And with that, a lot of questionable decisions, even ones that weighed heavily on their women's side. So
sure. Okay. All right. Your contenders. Who do you got?
My contenders. So I have Sporting, which I know that you had.
I had as a dark horse.
All
right.
And I say that because they have had a strong top eight finish over some other heavyweight teams.
Mm-hmm.
And then with that, I think it's because they're actually very, very hard to break down as a squad. And they're very, very strong in transition. I think that will serve them well coming up against any of the other squads. So I have a little bit more faith in them in being able to actually slug it out through the 16.
Okay. And they got a guy named Luis Suarez, which is fun.
Just not. Guard your ears.
Okay. And you got Chelsea and Inter Milan there as
Chelsea,
well.
Chelsea. Yeah. I mean, I'm looking a little bit to Liam Rossignol bump there. He seems to be getting some positive results with this squad.
Sure.
They looked good against Napoli. I'm not going to lie. They kind of dominated on all fronts this last match.
Yeah.
And so I think that recency bias be damned, I think that that has given me a little bit additional information to say, like, you know what? I'm seeing signs here that this is actually coming together that could be quite beneficial. So sure. I think
this is just another example of a team in Chelsea that we watch them in the Premier League and we're like, okay, yeah, they're all right. They're going to maybe top four or whatever. And then they play in Europe and it's like, yo, this is, some teams cannot even come close to competing. I mean, João Pedro, who we were talking beforehand, when I saw him, he made his debut at the Club World Cup. And when I was watching him at Chelsea, I'm like, this dude is no joke. This mm-hmm. is like, this is an elite. I mean, what in person? And again, we don't get to see Premier League players in front of us week in and week out. So, but you clearly
see. I don't
think
that I ever gave him the credit due in terms of how quality he actually is.
Yeah. I mean, just athletic. I mean, and then good on both feet. As far as the upgrade, and they were playing together, Nico Jackson and João Pedro, and it's like, all right, well, only one of you guys is gonna stay here. This is we don't need the recklessness that is Nico Jackson. He's been fantastic. And did you talk about Inter as well?
Yeah, quickly, Inter. Just again, they have come so close in recent seasons, the most of any Italian team in Champions League. They have seen a lot of European success, and also they just have very good tactical discipline.
Sure.
Yes, like we've talked about, like some of the problems of like players aging out and things like that, but I really think that Kivu has this underhand. I have a lot more faith in Inter in this competition than some of the other Italian sides.
I wonder, what did you think about the last week, the Arsenal? Was it last week or two? Or last window? I don't remember. Arsenal against Inter. When they beat them at home. And that was a game where I'm like, Arsenal might... I mean, they won every game in Champions League, which is obviously never been done before. But the fact that they went there, and I thought Arsenal would kind of stumble a bit, because usually you hear the San Siro and the environment and it's going to be intense and stuff. And they kind of didn't care about that. They really went and did their thing.
It was a match going into that I was a little bit worried for Arsenal, just in terms of sometimes we've seen them fall apart in instances, some lapses and just making poor decisions that Inter as a squad will absolutely capitalize on and just dive in and exploit every misstep and error that you possibly have. Again, when you're very disciplined like that, you have that. And Arsenal really just, they played beautifully. And that's one of the things that we're seeing this season, I think, as outside of being an Arsenal fan, objectively is a more well-rounded squad and better prepared for different styles of play coming at them, where Inter just fell short. They looked poor.
Yeah.
And they're not by any means a poor squad or unseasoned squad, or haven't, you know, wrestled with teams like Arsenal before, where it's like you could always rely on them defensively. It just was a different performance.
Yeah, the mentality from Arsenal. I mean, look, the loss against Manchester United is not ideal. You're going to have slip ups here and there. But I think collectively throughout both leagues and then even the other like cup competitions, this is an incredible team. I mean, they really don't make that many errors and they don't slip up that much. And I know some Arsenal fans are still worried they may not win the league and blah, blah, blah. And
I think a lot of that right now is superstition.
Yeah.
I agree with.
Obviously, anything is possible. But overall, this is the most composed Arsenal I've ever seen.
Composed, overall, fairly healthy.
Yeah.
Depth.
The depth. Even the building of the roster before the season of just like spending a lot of money on like players that are going to be on the bench is clearly paying off now.
I mean, how many times has it actually shot Arsenal in both feet that they found themselves unprepared in that sense? But they've been very balanced this season, balanced in attack, balanced in defense. They, the chemistry is there and flowing. It's a different squad. This has been a really strong group run for them too in Champions League.
All right. Last group here, our favorites.
Well, I mean, we already talked about it.
So I have Arsenal and Bayern Munich.
I do too. So.
Yeah. So I don't think there are. Look, I can't imagine there'd be much of a debate. I don't know who else to. In my opinion, I don't know who else to really include as far as like this. The interesting thing about, again, this league phase is because it is you're not playing teams multiple times. You could have a sort of the luck of the group. And Arsenal didn't have an easy group per se. And to win all of them, they have to be like your top favorite. And Bayern are always incredibly dangerous. I still think, look, they just lost to like Augsburg. They have a couple like kind of blemishes on in their
season.
We've
seen Bayern have that though in past seasons. And I feel like they just like take one on the chin and it somehow like reinvigorates them and they come back
overall
with a vengeance.
Through this champion, look, I don't know exactly, like I'm going with Arsenal to win the Champions League. At the very least, I think a Premier League team is winning the Champions League. I don't think every Premier League team effectively has been like really good in Champions League. And even the bad Premier League teams are very good in Champions League. So that's who I think is going to end up with it. What about who do you have as your favorites? Oh, God.
Yeah. So Arsenal Bayern, I have the same 1-2 punch combo as you do. I did add to that like Liverpool. And I add Liverpool simply because like they are, in my opinion, overperforming in Champions League and again, underperforming in the league. And we're seeing that as this sort of weird symptom this season in the Prem.
Yeah, we're going to get to a place where already in the beginning of the knockout rounds, can two teams from the same country play each other? Or is it like in the quarters or something like that? No, right? It could happen now, right? In the next round? I don't know. I'm not exactly sure. But as soon as Liverpool face a Premier League team, I don't think they're winning. That's my thought. I think the, again, the injury to Isak, the kind of still drama around, some people don't want Arne Slot there. The late, how many, they've given up late goals in like five games this season. Ingrid, our Liverpool resident fan, may know more. But yeah, it's so I don't, that's where my reservations sort of lie. But yeah, that's our tier list. Let us know what you think of our list. Feel free to engage in the comments. And obviously, I know you're going to be reasonable and positive.
As always.
Because that's the internet. That's the internet I go to. I'm only on SesameStreet.com.
I don't even go here.
So Anthony Gordon doing a press conference before the game against PSG, right, for Newcastle. And a journalist had asked him what are the differences between the Champions League and the Premier League? And this isn't necessary. I don't know. This isn't a question I think about that often. And I don't know how it almost feels like when a journalist asks this question, I'm like, what are you doing this for? Like, who? Nobody. Does anybody really care? But I think I sort of care more now after hearing Anthony Gordon kind of talk about it. And he had a couple interesting quotes. He said, I think in the Champions League, teams are much more open. They all try to play. It's less transitional. I think in the Premier League, it's become more physical than I've ever known it to be. It's like a basketball game sometimes. There's not much control. It's just a running game. He goes on to talk about duels and like basically if you win your duels, that's kind of the bigger difference. That's the difference between winning and losing a game. And that Champions League is just more kind of just like traditional football. So I this is an interesting conversation because this is interesting that a player sort of has this perspective and he's sort of kind of poo-pooing the Premier League a little bit, being like, hey, this is not top tier football that you're watching. You're watching sort of like athletes and sort of the giants of the game, battle and stuff like that. But you're not seeing like traditional sort of classic football that are and people trying to kind of break down teams and stuff like that, which I can kind of agree with. And to me, he's saying like, the Premier, he's sort of criticizing the Premier League, but in my opinion, I think he's sort of criticizing Arsenal because the differences in matches, especially with a team of Arsenal, like the set pieces and tactical fouls and throw-ins, long throw-ins and stuff like that. Like in the Premier League has gotten so successful financially that the margin, like you want to win. And because all the teams are so good, you have to find slight differences. Like I would imagine they're looking at the data. Like if Arsenal looking at the data, like where were we poor last season? Oh, maybe in set pieces. Maybe that's the thing we should focus on. And then they see it. They find this a ton of success there. And then it's like, okay, let's model. Let's kind of prioritize that because we're finding some success, but maybe that doesn't lead to the most like entertaining football match that you could see, but it might lead to success on the pitch.
Right. And ultimately all the clubs are looking for success. I think right. with the integration and availability of data for every team at this point, they're all have access to the same kind of information. And so that is sending this ripple effect through the Premier League, because now we have what, 13 points that separate second to ninth, which I'd argue is probably the most parity we've seen in a long time, yeah. like across the league, which is beneficial. With that being said, like when you look at everything else, they are also typically more draw heavy in the Premier League. There's certain things that are just going to be true because of the systems of play. I do think it's still largely more transitional play in the Premier League. I don't think it's just like, you know, boot and run. But if you look at the other side of the coin, like with Champions League, you can't bet. There's no benefit to a draw because essentially that's going to be the sword that you fall on,
yeah, yeah.
especially given the format. So when the formats are different, you're going to calibrate and adjust one way or another. So if you look at the Premier League, it's that you're seeing a lot of more, and again, some very good midfields, but the midfields are far more ineffective because they're not being utilized. They don't have as much time to breathe, to take a touch, to move the ball. Yeah, yeah. The pressing systems are much tighter than you're getting in Champions League. You're punished for more errors in the Premier League. So you're going to essentially adjust in a lot of ways. So I don't think that he's necessarily wrong, but I don't think that he's entirely correct.
Yeah,
I think that teams are doing a lot more to advance themselves, especially teams that are not able to spend. That used to be the old loophole, remember? Mm-hmm. So that was how you were getting your wins. It's like, oh, I can outspend you. Now with a little bit more guidance and restriction in terms of FFP
yeah.
and attention to it, teams don't have it at their leisure to do that. So now it's rely on data, change this. Also, goal differential. If you look at the goal differential between the Premier League and Champions League, right? Only one team in Premier League is above plus 15. Okay. Yeah. Now, several teams are already up plus 10 in Champions League by match day 7.
Right, right.
There's a different just systems at play here. And I don't think that you can compare in terms of what's happening with like, oh, Champions League is better. Champions League is different because the mechanisms by which you get through and you win are different.
Yeah, there's a lot sort of at play here, right? Where it's like in Premier League, it's like survival has become such a priority because again, the pot at the end of the rainbow, you don't want to not be there, right?
Right.
You want to be able to access that money. So clearly there's going to be a more conservative approach to wins and losses. Like, and it's also going to be a more conservative approach to even how much risk you take to try
right.
to win a game. Anthony Gordon is, frankly, he just sounds like he's saying like, I like playing these teams that are not in the Premier League. I like playing
yeah,
these other teams.
Sure.
They have a different philosophy.
Different styles, but also because most of the English teams in Champions League are, it's beneficial for them. They're doing well.
Sure.
So like the argument makes sense, right? So, like, but also if the Premier League relied solely on physicality and chaos,
mm-hmm.
Arsenal wouldn't be thriving in first in both Premier League and in Champions
sure,
League.
Sure.
The logic just simply doesn't apply. The inverse of happening where Tottenham is flipped too wouldn't exist. So there's certain things that just defy logic in a lot of ways, but it's essentially the systems.
Yeah, and you would imagine like every the clubs that he's playing against are in different leagues that don't have the same amount of pressure
right.
that can play a much more beautiful style, take more risk. This is why it sort of kind of goes back to, you know, when people I had seen Roger Bennett from Men in Blazers got into like a bit of some hot water because he had posted something. I saw it on Blue Sky, but it posted something on it, basically like on a newsletter saying like, this newsletter is for the real fans that wake up at 5 a.m. to watch games. And it's like, well, are you suggesting that the real fans that go to the games at 7 p.m. are not, you know, whether it's an MLS or NWSL or whatever.
Yeah.
So it kind of puts these blinders on of like, this is the best league. And this is what you should be watching. And that's where all the money is, and that's where all the best players go, the freak athletes or whatever. But then when the other leagues around the world, without that kind of financial pressure, can play the game how they sort of see fit, right, have a little bit of room.
It's more stylized, right? You're not just gunning for who can be better. We're remembering that, like, in Premier League, the one thing that you want to avoid is having this, like, runaway first place team by Boxing Day, which happens more often than not. This has been, I would argue, a little bit more exciting this season because it's been tighter. There's been threats. There's been some slip-ups that, you know, the entire mid-table is packed.
Yeah.
So
as an Everton fan, I'm like, hey, we in the mix.
Just and happy to be here.
Two wins and we're in a Champions League spot. Like, that's crazy to imagine. But this is it's sort of, you know, I look at also like Wilfred Nancy with the Columbus Crew. I enjoyed watching the Columbus Crew as coached by Wilfred Nancy. That was a fun team. Yes. Were they all Premier League players on that team? No, they were not. But they were fun to watch. And there's a joy in that. And it's like, yes, is the Premier League the best league? Or you have the best... I would argue they have the best players. I think that's safe to say. But
they have the capacity to buy the most expensive players.
Sure.
I don't think that it's one and the same, but for sure there's a lot of talent.
But it
there.
Does not necessarily lead to and the most entertaining product. Right. And I think this is what Anthony Gordon is kind of highlighting without saying that directly. I mean, it's also in the football.
Anthony, you want to watch some entertaining pull up to pickup. We'll dazzle you. I'm just saying.
But
also, like, I'm very physical, so you might hate that too.
It is kind of interesting for footballer speak. To say, like, oh, you know, these Champions League teams, I feel like they play like at real football or something. I forgot the exact quote, but
right.
But in footballer speak, that's like, you're talking about my mama? Like, that's like, you're kind of
it's
like,
it's definitely pejorative.
You're saying something a little bit crazy. So, you know, he's trying to say it in the nicest way possible. But I think this is an interesting thing to sort of even like kind of identify, like that even this is how a Premier League player might feel. You would imagine maybe a La Liga player feels like, who are these, you know, oafs that I'm playing in the Premier League? Like, why are they so physical? Why, you know, and stuff like that. Oh, maybe they have the same opinion.
It's just
too
funny to have that conversation when, like, Bundesliga has also been like a notoriously physical league.
Sure.
It's not like they're singular in this. Like, it's an aspect to squads games that exist. That
I will say this. I mean, after, like, you know, I've been to Germany a couple times, and watching Bundesliga in person versus watching Premier League in person, a lot of times people be like, oh, yeah, our league is physical. Like, it's like, is La Liga physical?
La Liga is like slick physical, though. Like, they're right. Like...
The one thing I would say is that more than any other league, I mean, I think in general, most leagues are fairly physical, but Bundesliga versus Premier League, the Premier League, they're also physical, but it's like every player has like 20 more pounds of muscle in the Premier League.
Yeah.
And that they are just physically.
They're big boys.
Yeah. It could be a McAllister, who's like a smaller guy, still physically stronger than most wingers in Bundesliga. The physical attributes are just much more elite than in other leagues. So that is, I think, what I think that's what contributes to obviously the physicality, the strength, but Anthony Gordon highlighting, like, the, you know, if you can win your duels, like, that is kind of the difference. But it's like, get in the gym,
football,
dog.
Right. Like, there's no such thing as pure football, because football will continue to evolve.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, this is so shout out. I mean, look, shout out to Anthony Gordon for at least mentioning and talking about it.
Thank you for entertaining us with an answer.
I appreciate it hearing that a little bit. So we'll see. But we'll see how Newcastle do. And look, he was a former Everton player. He was Anthony Gordon is a player who played for Everton, but was a Liverpool fan and had a very negative departure. So outside of this. You know, I don't want anything good for Anthony Gordon.
I was waiting for you to be the bigger person and say, like, you know, I want good things for him. Forget
I appreciate
it.
This, but he like hated Everton and was playing there, which is so, it's just like such a funny scenario, because he was like, his parents were
like.
You
never had a job you just pulled up to day after day and still hated? Because that's a unique experience.
I mean, there's a difference between like hating it my entire life and then going work there.
Fair.
So we'll see. All right. The U.S. women's national team didn't just win this week. They absolutely dominated. 11 goals, 0 goals allowed, and a team full of teenagers making grown women look silly. Are we witnessing the start of a dynasty, or was the competition not that great?
We are seeing an evolution in the U.S. women's national team under Emma Hayes. Things have changed significantly. She's had 32 different call-ups since she pulled up in May 2024, which is an insane number when you think about it. But she made it very clear when she joined as head coach of this women's team that this would be for now and for later. She had a very long-term plan in mind, and I think we're seeing a lot of players rise to the occasion and be able to demonstrate that they are, in fact, far more ready than she anticipated. There isn't a starting 11. There's now a squad of 30-plus, you know, including 5 new call-ups that were from this January camp.
Sure.
And so I think we're seeing this revitalization, a different mentality, we have a style, but we're also very nimble. We have more than the adequate tools at our disposal. A change of mind from what we had seen in this, what I'd call dynasty of a U.S. women's national team that was already established on the backs of very specific players that we all know and love that we are household names, sure. Right? We didn't see very many changes. We saw expectation of seeing the same rosters over and over again. This is new. This is a new frontier for what it means to be a player that wears this U.S. badge.
I wonder if Emma Hayes hasn't had the national team at a World Cup yet. Obviously, she won.
Won an Olympics off the back of being at the helm for just under 2 months.
Is it a concern of like having too much turnover? Is there any like leadership concerns? I'm not necessarily worried about it, but it is, it could be one of the cons of that.
Could be, but we haven't actually seen that in reality with this women's team. So we've seen more than a few players wear the captain's armband for the first time, notably in this 2-match sequence for January, Trinity Rodman, who, you know, yes, has a number, I think 45 caps at this point at her, you know, very old age of 23.
she's the vet.
And she's now been, you know, at the helm captain for a game. Yeah. And I think what we actually witnessed, if you paid attention to some of her communication to her teammates, is very active listening, participation, and follow through. And something that tells me is that she's someone who's very ready to do that for this team.
Well, yeah. And she's getting paid like a captain. So that I think that
on the back of her ink drying on her freshly negotiated deal with Washington Spirit.
Right.
Yes.
So but and then also, Vlatko ain't doing the sexy dexy with Trinity Rodman. You know what I'm saying? Like, the cool thing about that is that it highlights how much they want to play for this coach. I mean, every interview I've seen with Emma Hayes was just on Landon Donovan's and Tim Howard's podcast, and I was watching that. And she has a great she was talking. Look, they didn't give up any goals in these two games, but she was talking about I think it was a game against Japan where they gave up a goal, and she was happy that they conceded because she's like, okay, now let me see what this team can do now. Because obviously they're going to be very dominant, but as soon as they play the England's, the Spain's, I mean, it's a different level, and they don't necessarily get to prepare consistently with teams of that level all the time. So, but even watching that moment, I was like smiling ear to ear. I mean, what a grin on my face watching Emma. I don't even think I've seen many coaches ever do goal celebrations with players outside of like literally like jumping in their arms and sort of celebrating. But to do like a coordinated dance of this mom, she's just like, boom, like getting into it. I'm like, yo, this says so much about not only, she's even allowing herself to be vulnerable that publicly. I mean, I'm sure she doesn't want to be dancing.
No. She immediately turned in one of my favorite shots. Is they're doing the sexy dexy, and right over Emma's shoulder, you see Denise Reddy with this almost like Mona Lisa smile half like, like, girl, what are you doing? But also like, this is so entertaining.
You're embarrassing me, mom. Yeah.
And the fact that Emma understands that team dynamic. And these are things that she's said eloquently and articulately from the minute that she set foot in those managerial shoes for the U.S. women's national team is that she wishes to uphold the culture. She wants them to have this team unity. And I think that she understands that she's a huge part of that. And with that, you see these things where she, you know, sort of sacrifices herself and has a little bit of self-deprecation to prove to Trinity that, like, yes, like, I'm your coach, but this is two ways, right? Like, this works for me, this works for you. And she's willing to say, if this boosts the morale of the team, if this helps you be the best player that you are, then so be it. She's also addressed the fact that she looks at these camps and this time with the U.S. women's national team as a time to sort of sharpen up these players so that they're even better when they resume club play.
Sure.
And I think that her understanding, both as having been the most winning women's manager in Europe, is that, you know, her time at Chelsea has given her this depth and breadth of experience that she can bring two lenses of, like, yes, I'm your U.S. women's national team coach and I don't get to see you every day, but I want to make you better so that when you go back into your club team, that you are a more refined player for your individual coaches and managers.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, each time I'm watching, especially when she calls in Lola Banta, I'm like, I want Lola Banta to get her first goal for the national team. I'm just hoping.
Listen, she lets him rip at a range. She's real dicey.
So fun. But what's been fun here is obviously watching new players come through that I think a lot. Maybe if you're only watching your NWSL team or you know, if you're watching certain players that are playing in Europe and stuff like that, new sort of players pop up, and I wonder, you know, where it's almost like, where do they fit, and should we get sort of excited about it, because it almost feels like there's almost too many players. So one of the first ones that comes to mind who scored, Raylan Turner for Portland Thorns, and who had a great, this was her rookie season, right? This was her
first. So she was part of the last NWSL, last as in the draft before it was gotten rid of. She was a first round sixth pick for Racing Louisville, who ended up being traded to Portland Thorns in that same calendar year.
Right. So this is her. This is she's going into her third season.
Yes.
So she's like, scored for the national team. So exciting to see. But then it's like, Sophia Wilson was also like at the game with her baby, and it's like when she's ready to go, she's that's it. I don't know how many real spots are available. Mallory Swanson as well, after having her baby too. So there's a you know that the sort of next generation is, but it's not, Sophia Wilson is how old? 25, 26. I mean, there's not the competition, especially for the World Cup next year, is going to be pretty severe. So, but the fact that we're seeing so many players that potentially can kind of fit well with the system, even if they haven't had a lot of time playing under Emma Hayes, is pretty exciting to see.
Absolutely. And I think that's something that she is testing too, right? We've seen the emphasis that she has on suffering together, how you need to come together, how you problem solve. But we're also seeing indications of players who have not played together that have this really great chemistry off the bat. And it's because I think what Emma sees is similar vision in certain players, where it's like, oh, I think you view the game the same as this player here, who happens to be part of our camps regularly. Let's just put you out on the field outside of some of the trainings and see what happens. And we're getting some significant results there, including what we're seeing with Croy Bethune back, where we're seeing link up with, like, first time playing,
that,
like,
that goal,
Io Oke, who assisted her.
Right.
And the way that their ball progression and movement and expectation of where each other can and will be is one of the greatest indicators for me that there are a lot of underpinning things here that we're not seeing that just simply work.
Yeah, the Corbezun scored the first goal against Chile, and great goal. I forgot who made the pass, but the pass initially, I'm like, the pass was from Oke.
Oke, that was her assist.
That was her assist. But initially, I'm like, oh, is she offside or whatever? But there's obviously no offside in friendly or whatever. There's no VAR in friendlies. But when, we got to get that camera right. All right. Okay, in 3-2. What was I saying? Initially, I thought it was possibly offside, but obviously there's no VAR in friendlies. But the composure of the goal, the control and everything. So I think that was Croy's first goal for the national team, if I'm not
absolute
mistaken.
Absolute first.
First goal. Yep. Yeah, yeah. So another player who is, I mean, if you don't follow Trini Rodman on TikTok, you're missing out on the, I mean, they do it on the pitch, but they do it on TikTok, the dances. They recently did some TikTok dance, and then Emma Hayes photobombed it. I don't know. So they're having a good time, and the fact that they didn't concede any goals, I wonder, you know, again, if it's like there's a Emma Hayes still has to think about how to maintain that pressure and mentality when they are so much better than a lot of these teams. But it kind of shows like they're obviously going in a healthy direction. I wanted to give a shout out to Jonathan Tannewald because he had asked a reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer, I believe he works for. But he had asked Emma Hayes about kind of everything going on in the country with ICE and how if she's having conversations with players. But I think, and Emma Hayes, I appreciate she answered honestly. She was like, we haven't really talked about it because the I don't know if it's concern, but the players are very young. Some of these young women, they might be in late teens, early 20s.
Yeah.
They may not necessarily have, I'm sure they have opinions on it and strong thoughts. Maybe they're as a collective, maybe they don't want to communicate something that will, I don't know, upset people or something like that, which is, in my opinion, I don't necessarily care about that. But the mentality of the team and the mentality of the collective is clearly something that's on Emma Hayes' mind. And as far as when it comes to like on the pitch, it's clearly, yielding like obviously positive results, but everybody's like playing well. And going into obviously the She Believes Cup in a couple months, you have to, again, make the U.S. Women's National Team probably the favorites as well.
I mean, you know what? It's anyone's game. That's the beauty of football, sure. Right?
Yeah. I wonder, sort of conclude with what I started with, like the players are good. They are clearly very young. And what we saw like in the Olympics with Triple Espresso and all this other stuff. And it's like, is Triple Espresso over? Like where it doesn't seem like that is the case. But the fact that there's so much competition behind those players just sort of just shows where the sort of the health of the
healthy
program.
Competition.
Yeah.
The depth that's there, the capacity that this squad has to play together. These are all good problems to have. Like Emma Hayes has the most champagne of all champagne problems.
World Cup favorites, because the U.S. are not, they're ranked number two right now in FIFA rankings.
Are we two? One?
I think
two?
They're two. Yeah, they're big two. I believe
that
Spain,
doesn't sound
Spain
right.
is one. But, FIFA, number two right there.
Yeah. World Cup will be interesting, right?
Okay.
But I think that there's more than enough preparedness. There's now a squad depth of like 30 different players, given varying levels of health. And also they're very young. So, I mean, again, like Emma Hayes' plan is going along according to how she has dictated out for us from day one.
All right. You know she wants to win the whole thing.
I imagine so.
All right. Shout out to everybody for tuning in to another episode of Cooler Games. We always appreciate it. And shout out to my guest co-host, Christine Kupo of CBS Sports, Ion, everything. Joseph, you watch an NWSL, you watch Attacking Third on CBS Sports Colasso, you will come across Christine Kupo. Anything you want to, any parting words, you want to let anybody know anything before we leave?
I don't, look after each other and stay warm. Those are my key things. And also, as soon as it thaws out here, I'm looking forward to playing again.
Okay. Oh, yeah. How's the knee? After the ACL
I have
recovery.
Been
yeah.
Here and there, kicking around a bit, playing some small side games
Look
with
at that.
Some very select individuals that I know won't main me.
Okay. So definitely you don't want any, beasts out there trying to make a name for themselves.
Other than me. I'm the only one. I'm the only beast allowed.
You're the only one allowed to just slide tackle somebody who works at T-Mobile. But thank you always for joining me. Make sure you follow Christine Kupo, Miss Kupo Koopa on Instagram.
Yep. And C Koopa, which I'm not very good at tweeting at this point.
No, but, I mean, no one should be. Only the bots are good at it. Really. The bots are fantastic. They know really how to, have proper discourse.
Yes, for sure.
On deep social issues.
But yeah, pull up on socials. I'm out there, friends.
Sure. So make sure you follow us at Soccer Cooligans on all socials as well. Hit like on YouTube, subscribe, do what you got to do. We'll be back on Monday, but we have a special episode. We're going to be joined by the very special Derek Ray, the announcer for Bundesliga and the voice of FIFA and EAFC as well. So Derek Ray will be on the show on Monday. So be on the lookout for that. All right. We'll see you next week. I hope all your teams lose. And we'll see you on Monday. As always, peace, everybody.